This is Take Care, a health and wellness show produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Jason Smith.
And I'm Catherine Loper.
Health and wellness is popular for a reason. Generally speaking, more people seem to care about their overall mental and physical health these days. But has that always been the case? Joining us now is Dr. Len Kravitz, a professor of exercise science and coordinator of exercise science at the University of New Mexico. Dr. Kravitz, thanks for joining us today.
It's fabulous to be with you.
You've written about the history of fitness. When did exercising, either for fun or for physical fitness, when did it become popular?
Oh, the popularity of fitness really had a surge in the 1970s when Kenneth Cooper presented the concept of aerobics. And as you recall, that was a time when, you know, fitness was around, but we never had a central component. And Dr. Cooper of the Cooper Institute in Dallas, Texas, presented some magnificent research that he had done, you know, with the military initially, showing how beneficial aerobics was. And he really coined the term aerobics. And that was the 1970s. And then it had a second really big surge in the 1980s, where we had, you know, the era of Jane Fonda and her tremendous video exercise impact. And along with that came a tremendous interest in fashion for fitness. That was really, really the big surges that we've seen, you know, in the last 50 years in fitness.
I can picture the tights and the leg warmers in my head right now when seeing commercials for those aerobics videos being sold. Before the 1970s, did anybody exercise for fun? I mean, you know, and I'm thinking way back before the 1970s, is there a record of people doing exercise just to get into better physical condition? I mean, it's hard to imagine someone, say, in the 1800s just going for a jog because they felt like it.
Well, wonderful, wonderful question. And if we just move back a little bit, the concept of fitness was really more sport, where people competed. As you know, the Olympics are 2,400 years old. So people were doing exercise, but it was really the competitive, the recreational component really began. And you know, I think we can trace it, you know, about a couple hundred years ago with just lifting, and not weights as you and I know it, but lifting objects, you know, like rocks, trees and, you know, limbs and trees, where people were developing muscularity, you know, and along the way, we see that the genesis of resistance training guided our industry, you know, when you talk, you know, over 100 years ago, much more than that cardiovascular aerobics that Kenneth Cooper presented in the 70s. But it was so different, you know, the hype that they were doing was so different, but it had that musculoskeletal, let's develop the human body. And that led, as you well know, into, you know, bodybuilding, the sport of bodybuilding.
I remember seeing some of those old movies from the 1950s of somebody strapped to a device with a belt wrapped around them, and the belt shook, and that was supposed to be a way to have a flat stomach. Obviously, it kind of turned out to be a bit of a gimmick, but I'm wondering, how has exercising changed over time?
Without a doubt, technology. And you actually reference a period before we you know, jump too far, where that was when Jack LaLanne made his entrance. And of course, Jack LaLanne was all about, you know, the calisthenics, the weight, and the cardio all combined. And, you know, he was a chiropractor. So he tried to demystify some of those like products. I remember that product too, you know, that belt that would just swivel really fast, and it would hopefully whittle your waist, which it didn't. And technology, with the accompaniment of science, like for instance, you know, I consult to a number of companies, and a lot of them present ideas to me and want to know the scientific merit. Well, the growth of the exercise industry was when these, you know, innovators and product developers started working with, you know, scientists alongside them with their research and product development, taking us to a whole new level of evidence-based type of exercise products. And today, you know, you go into any fitness facility, you're seeing, you know, we have just surged in our technological aspects of any type of exercise, whether it be selectorized equipment or even different types of free weights, where we really understand, you know, what's best for the body.
There are so many different ways to exercise now. You know, you've got the aerobic exercise. You've got the exercise that more is geared toward building muscle. Is there one or more ways that tend to be the most popular forms of exercise today?
When you say the most popular form of exercise, you know, you're without a doubt hitting two mainstream peaks. And that's anything that is body weight or resistance training, and then anything that is aerobics. And both of them have pretty big categories. You know, the resistance training is for musculoskeletal health, aesthetics, or for, you know, a competition, powerlifting, Olympic lifting. And the aerobics as well has a sport component, but a lot of people just really enjoy group exercise, which has been around, you know, since, you know, even before the Cooper came, you know, we had, you know, very, very, you know, Jackie Sorensen introduced aerobics, you know, slightly before Cooper, where it was group exercise to music, and it had a really neat, fun, likable, enjoyable type of interest that attracted many people more for the fun and a little bit less for the health, but it drove, you know, the interest. And those really are our two major areas that we even see today, 2019.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care. We're talking with Dr. Len Kravitz, a professor of exercise science at the University of New Mexico. And of course, we're talking about exercise. In terms of popularity, which kinds of exercise tend to be the most beneficial for your body? I mean, you talked about aerobic exercise and resistance training. What's the most beneficial, or is it all beneficial?
Well, that's a really great question. Without a doubt, if I could start with the cardiovascular, one of the reasons I wrote my new high-intensity interval training book, Hit Your Limit, is there's so much new research now with HIIT training, which is bouts of a higher or harder intensity alternating with bouts of a lighter or a moderate intensity. And so it's, we think of it as an intermittent type of approach to exercise. But the research is so wonderful. Essentially, if I could capstone it for you, it's wonderful for health, cardiovascular disease prevention, and for fat loss. And the reason that type of training is so popular now is you can do it in almost 50% less time than a traditional steady state type of exercise. And time right now seems to be critical for everyone. With the resistance training, it's just so popular from a standpoint of musculoskeletal health. Musculoskeletal benefits now are realizing, you know, the heart as well, not just the skeletal system. And people seem to really enjoy, you know, the combination of both of them. And those are the people that are really the exercisers. You know, we have quite a few people, 30% of our population are, you know, total couch potatoes. They do nothing. And 50% of our population don't even meet the basic requirements, you know, by the, you know, our physical activity guidelines.
We were talking about the popularity of aerobics classes when they came to popularity back in the 1970s, and today we have it seems like one of the big things to do is the high intensity interval training. Maybe it's something like CrossFit or something like that.
The CrossFit, and there's several different variations of those programs. You know, in every city you go to, they have, you know, their high intensity. Sometimes you'll hear the name extreme exercise. You know, it's a higher intensity. And there is a big part of our population that really loves the challenge. Well, what I really try to, you know, endorse is that you challenge yourself at your own level to make it health beneficial for you. So in other words, a great HIIT class would be a class where we could have elderly individuals, middle-aged individuals, sedentary individuals, all of them changing the intensity of the exercise relative to their fitness level. And those are the best and healthiest class approaches, where everybody's going at their own fitness level.
And when you think of the level of popularity of some of these, like going back to the aerobics classes and the popularity of things like CrossFit today, when, you know, if you were to kind of look into your crystal ball and look 20, 30 years down the road, will we see these newer types of exercise like CrossFit? Will they be kind of looked at as fads, or do you think many of them will stick because of how beneficial they are?
It's a fabulous question. If we look at it retrospectively and then think prospectively, group exercise has always been with us. You know, Jackie Sorensen aerobics, Judy Missip jazzercise, Zumba has had a strong presence, all of the CrossFit and variations. We seem to really be evolving, but the research shows that a good 80% of the people who exercise like doing it with other people. There's a social phenomenon when you're in a class with other people. And you and I are going to see, if we look prospectively 30 years, there's going to be an evolution in exercise. I'm not the best one to predict it, but we will see that in 30 years, Group X will be with us. But it will be another form. It'll be another name. And you know, there will be a very, very, you know, strong following with it.
And we also, one of the things that we also have to remember is that the health and wellness industry, it is just that. It is an industry. Gyms and fitness classes and programs are still looking to make a profit. So what do you think that means for the consumer? Is it best for the consumer to pay a monthly fee to join a gym, or is it easy enough to do exercise on your own without paying anything?
It's another fabulous question. You know, fortunately in our society, you know, we have all levels of fitness clubs, from easy entry, which are less expensive, to some really high-end, offer a number of amenities besides classes. And then every city has recreational departments where the fitness classes are either free or a very nominal fee. And the way I like to, you know, summarize this concept of exercise to pay or not to pay is, choose what's best for you. Because, you know, like in Albuquerque, especially for seniors, we have these wonderful, wonderful senior centers that really cater, you know, to that population. And those are wonderful for them. But for the middle-aged adult, the rec centers aren't necessarily fulfilling the need, but the private industry really has captured that market. So, you know, you and I will see a little diversity as we, you know, peek around the country, you know, as far as what's offered, and then the pricing structure will follow.
We talked a little bit about how the technology aspect of fitness and exercise, and I'm wondering how has technology changed the way we exercise? I mean, you know, everybody you can put a fitness tracker on your wrist and it'll monitor everything. We have Bluetooth scales. How has technology changed how we exercise?
Well, it's all about awareness. And what's so interesting, you know, we found this out with pedometers almost 20 years ago. People love ways of tracking what they're doing. Pedometers are those really simple devices you put in your pocket or wear in your belt that would just count steps. And people were just glued to their pedometer to see how many steps they could do. And as you said, now we have incredible technology that pretty much monitor anything, you know, that you want from a, you know, health standpoint, clinical standpoint, or fun standpoint. But we seem to be affixed with this awareness that I can track my heart rate, I can track my workouts, I can track my calories, and it drives a lot of us. Now, that's not true for everyone, but it drives a lot of us. Like me, I want to always step more every day. I want to step more, you know, to beat my step record. So it's an interesting phenomenon that many of us are really definitely part of that technological creation of glued to technology with our fitness.
And it sounds like this technology, this increase in technology and in fitness is largely positive. As you said, it allows us to maintain that accountability. If you don't hit your step goal today, maybe you'll do more steps tomorrow. But do you think there's a negative aspect to this, all of this new technology in exercise?
You know, it's a great question. You know, I'm looking at the 2019 most popular trends. Number one is wearable technology, you know, the heart rate monitors, the workout trackers, calorie trackers, you know, all the different devices. If there is a negative component, it's that we as fitness professional, me and my industry, where what I'm a part of, we need to vocally and in our presence always talk about the greatest benefit of exercise is the health benefits. They're just are innumerable benefits, you know, from the biggest killer in our society, cardiovascular disease. So my message is we better, you know, really keep pushing our messaging that you are moving more, you're affixed to your wearable technology, but it's all about one major thing. You are improving your quality of life and hopefully, you know, that the quantity of years of quality life.
Do you see anything on the horizon that from a technology standpoint that goes beyond the wearables, the fitness trackers, anything beyond, say, the Fitbit or the Apple Watch that you might see people using to track their fitness in the next, say, decade?
You know, that's looking into the magic crystal ball. What I see without a doubt is these new devices, and I think many of them are there right now. I think, you know, the Apple Watch is there. You'll be able to plug in so much data, and they'll have such a database that what's going to, you know, outcome. And I do believe some of them, Garmin, you know, Apple Watch is there. They're going to be able to really give you an exercise prescription that's individualized, where normally you would have to come see me, you know, or a personal trainer who's qualified to do the assessment. But the technology is going to be so proficient that it's going to be able to monitor several different, you know, biosigns and then say, this is a perfect starting place for you. This is a perfect exercise design for you. You know, these are, you know, strong considerations. So I see that being the next evolution without a doubt.
Is there any indication that exercise is becoming more of a part of people's lives today than it was, say, over the last couple of decades? And what I mean by that is, are more people exercising, or is it just that some people are exercising more?
You just hit it. Some people are exercising more. We still have this incredible challenge. It you know, when I've studied it, because exercise adherence has always been an interest of mine, it seems we're really good at getting people started in exercise, and then at least 50% of people drop out after 6 months. And the people that are you know, maintaining and driving, you know, this fitness industry, it's less than 10%. But these are the people that do it all the time, twice a day, you know, multiple times a week. It's much smaller of the big population. And all we have to think about is right now in the United States, 68% of the United States adults over 18 are overweight or obese. You know, and a big part of the obesity challenge right now is physical inactivity.
Thank you very much for your time today.
It's been fabulous being with you. Thank you so much for all your wonderful questions.